Welcome to Booking the Territory, a pro wrestling podcast hosted by Mike Mills and Doc Turner. This podcast is all about what's going on in the world of professional wrestling. And now, here's your host, Mike Mills.
Hello, wrestling fans, and welcome to this week's edition of Booking the Territory. We have a really good show for you today, and I'm sure you'll enjoy it. We appreciate you tuning in. Thank you very much for your support. So last week, I spent some time with a good friend of mine that goes by the name of Rod Price. Yes, I'm speaking of Rod Price that worked in ECW and for the Global Wrestling Federation that currently replays sometimes on ESPN Classic. At that point, he was known as the California Stud, Rod Price. Rod and I talked for so long, we had to split our interview into two parts. Today is part one, and I'm sure you all will greatly enjoy it. However, before we jump into our interview with my good friend Rod Price, I want to talk about the sad news we just received this week about the passing of the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. What a great performer he was. Dusty was so easy to relate to as a fan. He was a common man, or the son of a plumber, as Dusty would say. I enjoyed watching Dusty throughout my childhood, just as many of you did. Dusty was flat out a great performer. I will never forget seeing Dusty when I was 10 years old at the Louisiana Superdome in the Crockett Cup Tag Team Tournament. He and Ric Flair went at it for the NWA World title that night, in the only singles match of the night, as I recall. Also, who could ever forget when Dusty came back after being injured by Ric Flair when he cut his now famous Hard Times promo? How about we take a second and listen to that one for a second.
Here is the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes. And Dusty, your fans welcome you back, man. First of all, I would like to thank the many, many fans throughout this country that wrote cards and letters to Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, while I was down. Secondly, I want to thank Jim Crockett Promotions for waiting and taking the time, because I know how important it was. Starrcade 85 it is to the wrestling fans, it is to Jim Crockett Promotions. And Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream, with that weight, got what I wanted. Ric Flair, the world's heavyweight champion. I don't have to say a lot more about the way I feel about Ric Flair. No respect, no honor. There is no honor among thieves in the first place. He put hard times on Dusty Rhodes and his family. You don't know what hard times are, Daddy. Hard times are when the textile workers around this country are out of work. They got four or five kids and can't pay their wages, can't buy their food. Hard times are when the auto workers are out of work and they tell them go home. And hard times are when a man has worked at a job 30 years, they give him a watch, kick him in the butt, and say, hey, a computer took your place, Daddy. That's hard time. That's hard time. And Ric Flair, you put hard times on this country by taking Dusty Rhodes out. That's hard time. And we all had hard times together. I admit, I don't look like the athlete of the day supposed to look. My belly's just a little big. My hand is just a little big. But, brother, I am bad, and they know I'm bad. And there were two bad people. One was John Wayne, and he's dead, brother. And the other one's right here. Nature Boy Ric Flair. The world's heavyweight title belongs to these people. I'm going to reach out right now. I want you at home to know my hand is touching your hand for this gathering of the biggest body of people in this country, in this universe, all over the world. Now, reach it out, because the love that was given me, and this time, I will repay you now, because I will be the next world's heavyweight champion on this Hard Time Blues. Dusty Rhodes Tour 85. And Ric Flair, Nature Boy, let me leave you with this. One way to hurt Ric Flair is to take what he cherishes more than anything in the world. That's the world's heavyweight title. I'm gonna take it. I've been there twice. This time when I take it, Daddy, I'm gonna take it for you. Let's gather for it. Don't let me down now, because I came back for you, for that man up there that died 10, 12 years ago and never got the opportunity to see a real world champion. And I'm proud of you. Thank God I have you. And I love you. Love you!
Well, I mean, I kind of listen to that and I get chills. That was Dusty Rhodes at his finest in front of a microphone. Well, Dusty, God bless you. We'll miss you as wrestling fans. Our prayers and thoughts go out to you and your family during this difficult time. Well, before we get into our interview with Rod Price, I need to give some love to our sponsor. We are sponsored by T&A's Wrestling Palace. For all of your wrestling memorabilia needs, please check them out. If you live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, you can find them at Trader's Village. If not, look them up on Facebook and on Twitter at T&A's Wrestling Palace. Best thing about them is they will ship to you and can supply you with just about anything you will want or need for your wrestling collection. All right, now, so coming up in a second is the man of the hour. Let's talk about our guest we have on this week's episode. I met Rod Price in the mid-90s. At that time, Rod had just come back from overseas, as he was telling me, and he was working for WWE, doing some dark matches. And soon after, Rod began working for ECW. Yes, that is Extreme Championship Wrestling that we're talking about. And this is the same Rod Price that Paul Heyman mentioned on the Stone Cold Steve Austin podcast a little bit over a week ago at this time. I met many guys during my time working indie shows, but none of them were as classy and as great as Rod Price was. Rod was a seasoned veteran that just never mind going out of his way to help out young guys such as myself. In my opinion, he is simply one of those guys that gets lost in the shuffle, but was just as good, if not better, than many guys you'd probably think you would want to put above him. Grab a nice beverage and settle in for my interview with my good friend Rod Price. Without further ado, let's get to the interview.
All right, everybody. I got an old friend of mine, somebody I give a lot of credit to really teach me a lot of things about the world of professional wrestling, not sports entertainment. And I got the one and only, well, when I first saw him in the 90s, back when I was in high school, he didn't know me at this time. He was, at that point, the California Stud. What's going on, Rod Price? How you doing?
Well, I'm not so sure. I like the opening, the old part, your old friend, you know. I'm doing good, Mike. I have no complaints, man. Everything's good.
That's good, man. Well, look, first, I'm really glad you had me on or you're on my show. It's really good to talk to you. It's funny because I don't know. We talk on Facebook and message every now and then, but we haven't talked on the phone in how long would you say?
No, not a long time.
Yeah.
Just recently.
Yeah.
We spoke about the condition of our friend's dad that was in the hospital.
Yeah. That's right. I hope Rusty's dad is doing pretty good at this point. But
He's out of ICU in a regular room. Should be coming home soon.
Okay, so that's good.
That's good. That's good news.
That is. Well, we hadn't talked in so long, and I know we talked through Facebook Messenger and text and whatnot, but I hadn't been on the phone with you, it feels like, in a while. So
yeah,
I'm just gonna jump right in. And so go ahead and because I don't know if people really know the history. You've been around this business in the wrestling industry for a long, long time, and most people at this point probably are like, oh, I didn't realize that, or, you know, it's been so long since they've seen you due to just various reasons and injuries and whatnot. But I'll let you kind of walk me through, you know, your beginnings and where you got started, how you got started in the business.
I got started, actually, it was about 1981, I guess, is when I was in the junior college, and we had a few of us had opportunities to go do some commercials, and these were through the track coach. and went and did one commercial as a professional wrestler. There was in California, there was a Miller's Outpost. It's kind of probably like the I'm trying to think of something to relate to. It wasn't a Walmart type, maybe more of a Dillard's type, but dealt strictly, you know, they dealt strictly in a lot of Western wear, and, you know, that was 1980, Urban Cowboy came out, so everybody that had a pickup truck wanted to be a cowboy in California, so.
Right.
And we did one, a friend of mine that's gone on to be with the Lord. Yeah, him and I did one. As, I was high prices, and I, of course, I was the villain. And he was, my friend was cutting high prices, so I was already taking a bump and jobbing back then. So, but Red Bastien was the was a choreographer for the thing.
Oh, that's how you met him.
Yeah, after the shoot was done, he came up and gave us a card and said, "Hey, you guys want to get into professional wrestling and come look me up?"
I never realized that's how you met him. I knew that's who trained you and how you got your start. I just didn't know that's how it happened.
Yeah, and after 81, probably after football season in 81, which ended in November, I had my classes down pretty good. They were early. I wanted to get them out of the way, so I'd go to school early, get those knocked out, and then I'd run out to East L.A. and started training with Red was done training. The last class that he actually trained was with Sting and the Road Warrior and Angel of Death. That was his class, and there was a few more in there.
Gotcha.
But he turned me on to Armando Guerrero, and that's who actually trained me. Red was around, but Mondo did all the on-hands work.
Okay. No, I got you. I see what you're saying. I mean, you credit him for it, but like you said, it was Mondo did the, I'll say the bulk of it, if I'm hearing you right.
Right. And,
okay.
And finished, went into train all the way through the summer of 82. Trained through that and played football, finished school there, got a scholarship to go to Long Beach State, which was closer.
Yeah.
So when I finished up my training, I was still playing football, but I wanted, you know, professional wrestling was always on the back burner. Wanted to do that, and I would go out to, at the time, San Bernardino, they had the San Bernardino All-Star Wrestling, and I'd go out there, and I'd have to wear a hood, and I'd do jobs for them out there, because they put me in, they dressed me up like Friday the 13th. Yeah, you know, they put the hockey mask on me. They called me Jason the Strong. Jason the Strong did a lot of jobs, but it sure helped pay for gas and some books and getting through school. It was a blessing in disguise.
Yeah.
And went to Long Beach State and finished that up. I started having some tryouts with some pro teams,
Hey, I want to ask you real quick before you go to the pro teams, because I want to get to that, because I know a good bit about that, but I want the listeners to hear it too. But I remember you telling me a story a long time ago about why you had to wear the mask, and I don't want to talk about it, but it had something to do with the NCAA, didn't it?
Yeah.
I think that's relevant today, because that's what's funny. They're still robbing student athletes, but that's just my opinion. But I want you to go ahead and tell everybody why you had to wear a hood.
Well, I had to wear a hood because if the NCAA found out that I was working professionally, I would have lost my amateur status.
Yep.
And I would have been ineligible. So that's the reason why I had to go under a hood.
So essentially, we stuck it to the NCAA there, and I'm glad you did.
That's a whole, you know, they should have been paying those athletes way back when, you know.
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
Schools make way too much money, but.
That's a whole nother topic. You and I talk about things
being. Yeah, that's a different chapter.
we could go down that rabbit hole, but that's a whole nother work in itself.
Oh, you're not kidding.
But go ahead and after Long Beach State, you were talking about pro teams and professional football, so I'll let you go ahead and tell that part as well.
Yeah, after Long Beach State, I had we had our pro days, you know. Then they really didn't have a the combine as they do now. They would just they sent scouts out everywhere. I ran for every team imaginable that came through. Green Bay at one time was really, they were really interested. My biggest asset was being a deep snapper.
Yep, I remember that. You told me that story, which I found interesting, but and I find it interesting because I remember when we talked about it, then you told me once the teams you were on, they listed you as a guard, I think, but you were really just a deep snapper, right?
Yeah, I mean, I played guard, nose tackle, linebacker all through college. They always, whatever roster, I was always listed as either a guard or a center.
Yep.
And the main thing I did was, you know, long snap. That's what kept me around and kept the interest from the NFL. And so I snapped balls for a lot of people. Didn't really hear anything, you know, so I started trying to get bookings from San Francisco all through Vegas. I was still trying to get my foot in the door with wrestling, and they kind of, you know, they were interested, but, you know, since I told them, you know, I may have a chance to go play football, they just continue to keep me under a hood and just use me as a jobber until 86 or 87 when I came out and actually wrestled. My first match without a hood was with Kamala. That was in Indio, California. That was the AWA.
I had no idea that was your first match without a hood.
But, you know, I was working, doing some stuff, doing some shots in Vegas, doing shots wherever I could get booked. I came home. I was in Vegas. I came back home, and I had a letter from the Raiders that they wanted to take a look at me, and it was within 2 days they wanted me to come out and take a look. So I went out and snapped balls till my arms fell off for a couple of days, and Steve Ortmeier, he took a liking to me, and hooked me up with the Raiders to do some long snaps. And I hung around with the Raiders for a while, and then...
What year was that?
That was, oh, man, that was...
Best you can remember.
Mid-80s.
Yeah. I figured that, somewhere around 85, 86, 87, somewhere.
And he ended up getting, he didn't get traded, but he went down to San Diego, and they needed a long snapper. So he went to San Diego, thinking I was going to be the, you know, the head long snapper, and I got down there, and they ended up trading for somebody that was a tight end and a long snapper. So they put me on the practice squads and hung around, just picking up a check, and never got in a game, but had the best seats in the house. Was getting paid, so it wasn't a bad gig.
No, not at all. I took that job when I was your age.
And then right after that, San Francisco was looking for a long snapper, and went up there for, I went up there for probably 4 or 5 weeks and long snap, and they had 2 or 3 people that could long snap, and they decided, you know, I was the odd man out, so I was released or cut, and after that, that was pretty much said, all right, you know, this, I could see where football was going, and so I headed on to Texas after that.
Now, that's what I was going to ask you, because I couldn't remember what year. I know when I first saw you, I was in high school. I remember that. I remember you in Global, but I don't know if you came to Texas for Global or you came to Texas before Global. That's what I was going to ask you today.
Yeah, I was with WCW, and I was there when, in fact, I was right there towards the end when Fritz was selling off WCW to Lawler, and it went to USWA.
And now, see, I've known you for 20 years, and I did not know you came at the end of Fritz. I had no idea. I had always assumed it was once Global started, but that's interesting. I had no idea.
Yeah, I came down there, worked with them. That's when I hooked up. Steve Austin was still cutting his teeth with Chris Adams through the school and working Chris's shows.
Mm-hmm.
And they tagged us together. And
how long did y'all tag? I've never asked you that. I know y'all tagged. I just don't remember the length of time or how much time y'all spent together tagging.
We tagged a lot in Dallas. Steve, I was still working in around Dallas, USWA, and there were some other promotions going on, and I was working those. Steve went to USWA for, I don't know, a few weeks. And he came back, and he was still trying. He was married at the time, still trying to, you know, send money to his wife and live on the road.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was a hard time for him. And then, Lawler and Jerry Jarrett came up to us and said, "Hey, you guys want to go to?"
Memphis, right?
Yeah, that's when they completely took over Sportatorium, where we do a TV taping in the morning and do a spot show in the afternoon, and then leave. I think it was one time we leave at midnight and get on a bus and go to Memphis, do Memphis, get there in time to do Memphis TV, and then do another spot show somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And get on that circuit of Louisville and went to Evansville and all over. I mean, it was different.
It was a different city. That was the end of
travel.
Yeah, that was the end of the territories, basically. And I call them territories because I've heard actually Steve Austin say that, but from what I remember, that was the end of my high school days. I remember that being the end of, I guess you can call it, the last territory. But you're right. It was from what I remember and the stories I've read and heard from everyone, it was basically, you know, different town every night, just like the old territory system.
Yeah.
Is that correct?
Yeah. It was, you know, it was good experience. I did that for a couple of weeks, and I had an opportunity right after that. They asked me to go to Puerto Rico. In fact, Akbar was going to book, and I think, I want to say that was 89 that we went down there, or I went down there, because we were the first group back after Brody had got killed down there.
I didn't know that. Well, I knew about Brody. I didn't know y'all were the first group back down there.
Yeah, and it was quite intense.
Man, you got more stones than me.
Yeah, well, there was a lot of there was a lot of tension between us
all. I bet.
But I stayed there a month, and, you know, they promised so much money. We were going to make so much money here and there, and it just, the
it
money was
happened.
There about the first 2 weeks, and after that, they started getting in debt with the casinos. So our pay dropped. And after the anniversary shows, I said, all right, I'm done. I'm out of here. They wanted me to stay, but I didn't want to. There was no way I was going to be down there.
Dang.
Because Akbar
yeah.
was leaving. A lot of the guys were leaving. I go, I'm not staying down there pretty much by myself. So.
No, I don't blame you on that. You, like I said, you had more stones than me going down there in the first place after what happened.
But
when
I got back, that's when Joe Pedicino had taken over the Sportatorium and started the GWF.
That's whose name I was trying to remember last night at the show I was at. I was talking to somebody, and we were talking about Global, and I could not remember his name. And I know you had told it to me before, and I'd read it before. But, yeah, I remember that. I'm glad you said that because it was on the tip of my tongue last night. I couldn't remember who you know, got Global up and running at that time.
You're
and
right.
that's, I think that's like 1992. And the only reason I remember that, I know I was in high school at that time. And that's when I first remember California Stud on TV. You know, because I'm like many before I even was an indie, you know, and all I ever did was indies, as you know. Before I was an indie guy, I was a fan, obviously. And so I'll let you go ahead and talk about that, the Global days that you were getting into.
But Gary Hart was running. He had the Metroplex Arena. I don't know if you remember.
Yeah. I've heard it. Yeah. No. I've heard it. Actually, I think there's some stuff on YouTube at Metroplex Arena with you on it, actually. I think it may be something on it with you and Steve Austin tagging. It's
yeah,
on YouTube.
We
I saw it not long
we
ago.
Tagged. We had we held the belts for a while.
Yep.
And
I do remember seeing that.
And my timeline may be screwed up a little bit, but shortly after that, Steve went to WCW.
Mm-hmm.
And Steve went to WCW, and that's when we had opportunities to go to, or I had an opportunity to go to Japan, and I jumped on it, and wrestled in Japan for many years with Sakurada.
Mm-hmm.
and we come back. It was a pretty good deal because we could work global. We could work, you know, these independent shows with Gary Hart, and Tim Brooks was running. And, you know, it was, at the time, everything was flowing good. And then,
well, yeah, because y'all had the ESPN had the TV deal. So I would assume, I mean, heck, I was in New Orleans, Louisiana, watching it. I'm assuming anybody who had cable could tune in at, I think it was like 3 o'clock in the afternoon on ESPN Central Time, and they could tune in and see Global. So guys like you, you know, anybody that worked for Global that was getting TV time was getting national exposure at that point. So
yeah, they,
that was great help.
That's what they wanted. They wanted they were targeting that after-school audience is what it was for.
Yep.
For ESPN, that's what they wanted.
Yep.
So we had to calm down, couldn't do a lot of things. Couldn't do a lot of the violent things that we wanted to do.
Yeah.
So it was pretty diluted in what we did.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you think about that Global with Pedicino and the roster we had. I mean, we had
incredible
act, and we had the Karate Kid. I mean, it was a loaded card, man. And then, as it happens, Vince started taking away talent.
Yeah,
and he pretty much sucked that territory dry with the main talent. And Joe kind of said, "Okay, I had enough," and then Max Andrews picked it up, him and Gray Pearson, and they started it again.
Yeah.
And that's
right. I remember that. There was a little break, wasn't there? Yeah, I remember that. I do recall that, not you saying it.
Thank God during that break I still had opportunities to go overseas and wrestle. So I stayed busy. And then Pedicino took over, and we would do, on a Friday night, we would do 5 tapings. I mean, it was a long, Fridays were long. And that's when they paired Tatum and I up, and they brought in.
I love that. I got to stop you, because you and Tatum were something else. Again, I was a fan, but it was really good. Oh man, it was. I'm laughing because I still can picture like his facial expressions and his mannerisms, and I never met him. You know, I don't even know if he was working by the time like I met you and later in the '90s, but he had some of the greatest facial expressions. He just
John,
it was amazing.
John had been around. He went through Mid South with Bill Watts. And it was an experience, but we still had good talent. We still had Eddie Gilbert was still around. They brought in Ebony Express.
Yeah.
And they brought in the Young Bloods. And so we always had good talent to work with. And John and I were able to book ourselves out. We did a lot of shows in Atlanta and a lot of shows, you know, on our own. St. Louis, Butch Reed had a little deal going. We'd go work for Butch. And like
I didn't realize
we
at that time.
Busy.
Oh, y'all kept it. Yeah, I was going to say, that's what I was about to say. I didn't realize at the time how much indie stuff was going on too, like just outside Global. I'm a fan. I'm 15 years old, I'm watching what's on TV, so that's all I'm seeing, that's all I know, you know, not seeing advertisement for indies at that point. I had no idea that there were even indies in, you know, that 92, 93 range.
Yeah, and about 94, things started falling apart, at Global. I can remember Kevin came in and bought it, and he was, I'm sorry, before that, let me back up. Before that, Crockett came back and wanted to start it all up, but he wanted to turn everything back to, you know, there was no intro music. You came out dry, and the people were already conditioned for the hoopla, you know, all the bells and whistles, and Crockett didn't like all that, so we came out to no music, no smoke and mirrors, and that didn't last long. And then
people took a crap on it, right?
Yeah, and then Kevin came in and bought it from Crockett, and it lasted, if it lasted 6 months, it lasted 2 weeks. But Kevin was, you know, reliving the old days, but thank God Kevin was willing to do independent shows. So you had Chris was booking, Tom Lance was booking. So, again, you know, I was blessed to be able to stay busy because I always worked either Chris or Kevin.
Yeah.
And it still had the Japan gig going on. And 95, I had an opportunity to go to Europe, the Russell for Otto Vons, worked over there from, I guess, the end of April till December. And I came back, and WWF was interested, so I did a lot of dark matches with them. But they just, you know, they had a bald-headed Steve Austin, and then you had a bald-headed Goldberg. So they didn't know what to do with me. But they kept, you know, they kept me busy with dark matches and worked for them, you know, quite a bit off and on.
Yeah.
And then shortly after that, I went to ECW and wrestled there for a couple of years. And
well, Lee, let me ask you this. So I'm up because I want to get to the ECW part. So I didn't realize after Global the whole WWF dark matches, you know, that happened. I'm trying to figure out when did you end up in Louisiana? Because that's when I met you. I just don't remember the year.
Well,
I want to say it's like '96. Like that you were there.
I came down, yeah, right after I got back from Europe. Akbar called me and said that they had a guy down there that was promoting, and they were doing 4 or 5 shots a week in Louisiana. And Grizzly was involved, and Sam Houston, Jake was involved a little bit. So it was, and still going to Japan, and it was still, you know, hashing out a living. And then the promoter, as they do, he got to start making money, and instead of putting it in the business, he was putting it in his pocket. So
that never happens, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and that died off, and that's when ECW kicked in, and I went and worked for Paul for 2 years.
Hey, I don't know if people know this. So, like, you want to talk about? Because I didn't know this until I had met you, and then I think you told me a little bit later how you had known Paul, but most people don't even know that how you ended up in ECW. So, if you want to talk about like how you ended up there. You know, go ahead. I know you knew Paul before ECW, and that's how you got that connection, right?
Well, I knew Paul, and I'd met Dreamer on some of these indie shows. We were working out of Memphis, and at the time, they were looking for like a training ground, and they had they'd use ECW guys, USWA people. They used, the guys that were kind of left around. I think some Portland people came through.
Mm-hmm.
And what they were going to do is use that as a training ground. And then because the territories had pretty much dried up, they were going to use Memphis as a training ground, and that was going to be, you know, your springboard into WWF.
Gotcha.
And that's where I met Tommy. And,
gotcha.
And I knew, I met Paul before. We always hit it off, and then got the call. Let's see, they were coming through Louisiana, and I just finished up like four or five dark matches with Vince, and I met ECW in Alexandria and worked for Paul, and we came down, we worked in Alexandria, I think we worked in West We Go, and
New Orleans at that point. Oh, Chalmette. Yeah, Chalmette.
Worked in Chalmette.
Yeah. I remember that, actually. Because you, at the time, you were working indie shows where I was at as well. I mean, we knew each other at that point, because I can remember having, you know, just, you going up. And actually, I remember a couple times, I think I had to pick you up from the airport, because you were flying in. You were flying from somewhere, because I remember picking you up to be at the indie show that I was at that day.
Yeah, I remember coming in from Atlanta.
Yeah, yeah.
And being picked up and worked for Don, out of Chalmette, and then after we did, in fact, Gang was at that Alexandria show, so we both worked that show, and Paul picked both of us up, and we started running with them. They'd about 4 days a week, 4 or 5 days a week. We were working for ECW.
I remember that when you were up there and you were working for them, and it was pretty steady work too for a little while, it seemed.
Yeah, it was good work for about 2 years, and then the pay-per-views didn't quite go as we thought they should be, and Paul, I guess, he got screwed on that deal too, so we were expecting a little more money, of course, but it didn't come, and his guys were ready to move on. And he had the Dudley boys were getting ready to leave to go to WWF. And him, the Dudley boys, Rob Van Dam, a lot of the guys were getting ready to jump ship. So that kind of put the squeeze on ECW, and they were kind of running out of money. And Paul was... he would fly me in just to be more like an agent, watch the shows, and put in my 2 cents, and so got paid for it. So it was for me, it was a good way to. I was at the end, you know. I was at the end of my career, and I was enjoying what I was doing, you know.
Yeah.
It was good to be part of it, and when I left ECW, when it was over, I was just like, I'm done, you know. As far as pushing and wrestling, I did open up a school out in Gulfport.
Yeah, I remember when you I remember that. I remember you opening up the school and doing that. And I know when ECW was done, you were you were still kind of doing independence, but I guess it wasn't, you weren't like going everywhere from what I remember.
Yeah, no, I was pretty much staying around the house and had to school up till Katrina hit, and Katrina wiped out everything. In fact, it wiped out, from where we had our school out, it wiped out about two or three blocks above that.
I can believe it.
So we just, I just figured it was time to move on.
Yeah, it gets to that point, right?
My body was done. Body was wearing out, so I just pulled out and went on and jumped in the real world and started working, and I still miss it, but the way wrestling is now, I don't miss it that much.
All right, everybody, here we are for another edition of Booking the Territory. Actually, as you're seeing, it's actually a continuation of our latest edition. You just listened to the first part of Rod Price, and Rod giving his insights on the world of professional wrestling and his time in the ring. What's going to happen is next week we'll have part two up of Rod. But as of right now, we're going to get into the review portion of our show. On the line tonight, I have Doc Turner, and I have my other buddy, longtime wrestling fan, Mr. J. Swy Robo. Doc, J. Swy Robo, how you doing tonight?
Doing good,
hey,
Mike.
Man. Doing pretty good, Mike. It's Friday.
All right. Well, let's get this thing started. I just want to jump into it like we always do. No need to hold back. So, Doc, go ahead. Give me your thoughts on Raw from this week.
I'd like to give you a big rundown of what I remember, but it was 3 hours of a whole bunch of nothing. So the only thing that kind of got me popped was that funny skit where R-Truth comes out to cut his promo on being in the money in the ladder match for the Money in the Bank, and Kane stopped him down and said, "What are you doing out here? You're not even booked in this match." So, you know, for one time, Raw actually succeeded on a comedic level, but other than that, it was pretty forgettable when I watched 6 other hours of wrestling since then and remember a lot more about them than Raw.
Yeah, this week's episode it wasn't hitting on all cylinders. I don't know, from what I've seen and what I've read, it kind of felt like a time filler. 3 hours of time filler, because they knew they had the pay-per-view coming up this weekend or whatever you want to call it, which we're going to get into in a minute. But Jason Robo, what do you think, man? What was your take on it?
So this is my thing. The Raw before a pay-per-view is always supposed to set the scene for the pay-per-view. It's supposed to solidify the storyline. It's supposed to know who the major players are. And it's supposed to give you excitement before, as you go into the pay-per-view. This Raw, to me, honestly, and I didn't see all of it, it didn't really entice me to even want to order the pay-per-view, just to be perfectly honest. And I have the WWE Network, so I get it for free.
Yeah, I don't know. It's kind of – the best way to describe it, I guess, would be stale. There's no other way to put it. I don't know. But at the same time, you know, I don't know what they could have done. I don't know what they could have added to build upon it. You know, I'm trying to backtrack because so much happens in between now and Monday, but – and we're sitting here on Friday night, June 12th. I don't know what else they could have done to solidify what was going to happen. I mean, it seemed like most things were already set in place for the most part. So, yeah, what could they have done? I mean, we already knew about Cena and Owens. You know, most of the matches we already knew what was going on. So, I just don't know. I don't know how you can add to that. And see, that goes to the greater issue that's probably going on here is, so you already have so much TV time. I mean, you're talking about they got the network, you've got Raw, you got SmackDown. There's so many hours of TV time, it's just excessive, and there's only so much you can do, I mean, before you make something stale. Now, I know why there's 3 hours. We're not going to beat this dead horse, but at the same time, you can't really do much more. It's gonna stay that way because USA is pumping big dollars into it, and it's WWE. What do you guys think?
Well,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
You know, the thing there is that the first 30 minutes of Raw was actually good, and it was Owen and Cena, and then Neville comes out, and that's got my attention. But the real problem there is, do I or does anybody else really trust the WWE to continue to book this Cena and Owens angle in a fashion that appeals to an actual adult instead of a 9-year-old? And that's my big problem is, and we'll get into it later, I bet, when we talk about Money in the Bank coming up, is what are they going to do with Cena and Owens come Sunday and beyond?
Well, no, that's a good question, and I'm going to throw this out at both of y'all. We get into the whole Money in the Bank discussion. Doc, who do you think wins? Just quick answer. Who do you think wins on Sunday?
I think Owens loses. I think Cena wins by disqualification. Owens beats the hell out of him and gets disqualified.
Okay. Jason Robo, what do you think?
I think Cena wins outright.
I have a different theory. This is something I don't know. Something's going on in my mind where I'm thinking they got this thing coming up on July 4th in Japan. I think we talked about it last week, Doc, you and I did. So Owens is going to be on that, and now it's slipping my mind who he's working against. But
it's Finn. It's Finn Balor.
That's right. So Finn is big in Japan from his time over there. Like, what if they're doing this thing where they're eventually going to take the title from Owens in Japan, but, you know, Finn gets it, the NXT title, that is. But they continue with this. So that kind of gets Owens off of the NXT brand, I guess you'll call it. And then, so then that leaves more to do between just Owens and Cena. And they let Owens continue. He gets a better Cena again, whether it's a pinfall or whatnot. And now that sets up an even further program. Because remember, Cena and Rusev went for months. It spanned over, I think, 3 or 4 pay-per-views. But I don't know. That's what I think. So I think – I hear both of you saying you think Cena gets it. I have a feeling Owens goes over again this time around. Just my thoughts.
Look at it this way. So Owens has made it on a big stage. He's now on the Raw roster. He can't be on the main stage and be the NXT champion. So the perfect way to segue for him to be fully in the WWE on the main stage is to lose the title. The NXT will probably have some type of tournament or something for the NXT title, and the Owens-Cena rivalry will continue.
See, I don't know if they're going to do – I can't see them doing a tournament deal. That's the only thing. I don't see them doing a tournament deal. I really think that – I think Owens drops it to Finn in Japan on July 4th, and I think he continues with a Cena feud.
I told you my conspiracy theory a couple of days ago on that.
What's that? You refresh my memory. I'm getting old.
Vince has Cena beat Owens for the NXT title and turns and puts his elbow in Triple H's rib and says, "I'm still the boss around here," and Cena's now the NXT champion.
Yeah. I wouldn't put it past – anything's possible. I can't say I can see it happening, but, you know, it's possible. Definitely possible. Who knows? All right, so we got 2-1 now. You both got Cena, I got Owens. Okay, Here's another one. I'm not going to cover the R-Truth Barrett deal. It just, I don't know. Do either one of you care about that match?
No.
Okay. And this is nothing against R-Truth, and this is nothing against R-Truth and Barrett. Doc, you and I have had the discussion. We both like R-Truth a lot. We respect them. We really like them. I don't have anything against Barrett either. I just think the way that they've built the two of them and what they've done with the two of them. I mean, Barrett was the King of the Ring, and he hasn't done anything since. And I mean, R-Truth gets a pop, and he, most of the time he doesn't go out there but lose. It just goes to show you. I mean, that's why I can't buy into that. So we're going to skip over that one. But here's the big one, because I really don't know what they're going to do. Well, I know what I'd like them to do, but with the ladder match and the money, I'm talking about the Money in the Bank ladder match, you got Dolph Ziggler, you got Neville, you got Roman Reigns, you got Orton, Kofi Kingston, Sheamus, and Kane. Jay Swarobo, who do you think wins that one?
I hate to say this because I really like him, but I think that they are pushing him on the fan. I think Roman Reigns is going to win.
Doc, what do you think?
I don't like him, and I think Roman Reigns is going to win. But if mainly because he can walk around now with the briefcase and hold it over Rollins' head, because Rollins used the briefcase to kind of jump on him at WrestleMania, kind of thing where he ran in there. If I was booking the territory, since that's the name of the show, let me book some territory here. I'd put it on Kane. And let Kane harass Seth Rollins, who I think wins later on in the night, and have him sit there and say, you're going to do what I say, or maybe I just cash this in at any point, and cause a little strife within the authority. So it would probably get crapped on in the arena if Kane won that, but I think you could book it to where it would have some interesting repercussions, because Kane cut one of the best promos of the last few months. A couple months ago when he told Rollins that they could have put the belt on anybody, even El Torito, and they just chose Rollins. So I think you could further that angle quite a bit by giving him the briefcase.
Now, that was great. It was the methodical nature in which he stated it. We could have put the belt on El Torito. I mean, that's an interesting – that, no, no, no. That's a really interesting take. I honestly could see that. I can't say it. I see it happening, but it's an interesting take on it.
Hey, I predicted Roman Reigns to win because that's the safe pick. But again, how I book a territory with all the money I've made in this business may be just a little bit different than how Vince chooses to do it.
All the money you made. Oh goodness. All right. Well, no. Great idea. Well, maybe not great, but I could see it. It could. The fans would crap on it, but I don't know how they get through this thing with you know, I think Ziggler's already got the Money in the Bank. He's already got a win in that. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, he's won it before.
He has won it before, because he was the heavyweight champion.
Okay, so that's right. Here's what I think will happen. I think Roman Reigns wins. I do. I don't see how he doesn't. I just don't see anybody else. I don't see them putting anybody else in that spot. Now, what if I'm booking the territory? I would love to see Neville go over, because I like him. He's everything he does is just smooth and it looks good. The guy's got it. I wish they wouldn't have changed his name to just Neville, but whatever. But I like Neville, and I think if I was booking the territory, that's who I'd take. Because remember, you got a while. I mean, before you even – you're talking – they always drag this out. I mean, you're talking 6 months before he ever cashes it in, at least.
Yeah, but we talked about this in episode one last week. There's a whole bunch of guys in this show that are designed to do all the work, just like probably the three of us go to work and do most of the work at our jobs. Then somebody else way above us comes in, swoops in, and takes all the credit for it. That's exactly how I see this match goes. So, yeah, I like Ziggler and Neville and even Kofi from a watching and work rate perspective a lot better than the guys like Orton and Sheamus and all those other snooze fests. But I don't think it's going to happen.
I hear you. I hear you. All right. So we all agree that it's going to end up being Roman Reigns, but we all would like to see maybe some kind of something happen where it's a surprise. Would that make sense?
I would.
Yeah.
I agree. I agree.
Kind of thinking the same. I'm thinking the same thing. Okay. So, all right. We got the next. I'm going to save Rollins and Ambrose for last. So, next matchup we're going to look at is The New Day versus a primetime player, Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. And this is for the WWE Tag Team Championship. So let me tell you what I think, and then I'll throw it at you, Doc, first, and then Jerry Swarovo, I'll throw it at you next. So, all right, here's what I think happens. There's no way they give it to Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. I just don't see it. It'll be some kind of deal where New Day, you know, gets their heat, and they find a way to pull it out between Big E and Xavier Woods, and they go over. But I think this will be a real good. I think this will be a real good match, and I say that because Darren Young and Titus O'Neil. I thought they had a good performance at the Elimination Chamber. It kind of shocked me that they ended up being in there last with the New Day. So I'm kind of looking at the same thing, but I don't think New Day drops the belts. I just don't see it. So, Doc, what do you think?
I can't add anything to that. I agree 100% with what you just said.
Okay. Jason, what do you think?
I think it's too soon for New Day to drop the belt. Now, what I do think, I think it's going to be a good match. I think that this is going to be a rivalry that's going to last over a couple of pay-per-views. I think that, you know, the primetime players, baby, they back. They are back.
Millions of dollars. Millions of dollars. I like them, man. I'm really glad to see, actually, him, O'Neil, and Young to get, you know, I'll call it this push, because – I really like both of them. I actually was at a house show probably 2 years ago that I went to, and they were on it. And man, they might have been third match. I say 2 years ago. It's whenever they had, I guess, were going through that breakup phase when they had broken up. And they stole the show. Like just what they went out there and did. The crowd was more into that than they were. Probably just about anything else on the show. And, I mean, Cena was on that show. Orton was on that show. The general, Sheamus was on the show. It was, you know, for a house show, it was all the I'll say big names were there. And they stole the show in, like, the third or fourth match. So I really like what they do. I like what they're bringing to the table. And, you know, who knows, with Tyson Kidd out now, that kind of puts they need a babyface tag team. They may be that tag team that gets the push as the faces. We'll see.
But
Go ahead.
I like the primetime players as heels, though. They when they are heels, they are running on all cylinders. It's hard for me to see them as faces. It's just hard for me to see them as that. However, it has to be a top face team in order to face off against the heel tag team, so, you know, but
yeah.
I like the primetime players as heels. Their characters really, really, really show multiple dimensions when they're the heels as opposed to the babyface.
Yeah. Here's why I think they work as a – I hear what you're saying. Here's why I think they work as faces right now. Because
okay.
You've now established – the thing is that you've now established New Day as heels. Thus,
right.
The primetime players will get over as the faces. Because, see, if you didn't have the New Day, it would be harder. But because of what New Day has done, man, I don't know now. It's got to be 7-8 months of this. I can't remember when they started it. They were faces at that time, but, you know, now they're heels. And that's what helps Young and Titus O'Neil get over as faces. I mean, plus the fact that they can work. They know what they're doing. I mean, they're vets. They're not just, you know, flopping around the ring and not knowing what's going on. So that's my take.
I'm just don't watch for Vince to start slipping in some subtle racism, because this is a guy who brought us Crime Time. You know, I don't know that Vince can help himself with four African-American gentlemen tearing it up in the ring without inserting some silly, goofy, racially-based angle to all this.
Crime time. Crime. Good old crime time. More money, more money. Oh, man.
God damn, pal.
Oh. All right, well, we're gonna move on from the New Day and primetime players now. So let's cover Ryback and Big Show. This is for the Intercontinental Championship. I don't see Big Show winning. I see Ryback as winning. However, nothing would surprise me here. And one of the main reasons I don't see Big Show winning is, like, Ryback just got it. I mean, it hasn't been but 2 weeks now, so. Yeah, I just don't see him dropping it that quick. They wouldn't have put him on it. They wouldn't have gave it to him that quick. But, however, let's remember, who knows what would have happened with Rusev in that match, and maybe he was going to be the one that was going to carry the IC title if he wouldn't have gotten hurt. Maybe there was a switch at the end because he was hurt. Ryback ended up, you know, winning that. So I got Ryback. J-Swire Robo, who do you got in that one?
I got Ryback. I don't see Ryback dropping the title this soon. I don't see him dropping into the Big Show. I think that this is probably going to be one of those instances where I could see either a clean win by Ryback or a disqualification win.
Who knows? They may do a double DQ. There's no telling with that.
Yeah, it could be that. It could be that. I just don't see the Big Show winning it. I think that That would just take away from the Big Show's whining antics and victimization. I kind of like the big guy, not the big guy, but the big guy in the Big Show portraying his victim as opposed to the dominant character.
Say that again. I'm trying to understand it.
So remember when the whole authority gimmick started, and the Big Show was fired, and then the Big Show came back, and then the Big Show stole out. And
Okay.
So it just goes into this whole, you got this guy who really, it's kind of like Andre the Giant. It could beat anyone on any given night, and he only loses because he chooses to lose. And so the only way to make it believable is for him to have some type of issue. So right now he's going through this whole victimization thing where he deserves to be a champion and he's not getting a break, this, that, and the other. And so with Ryback beating him, there's going to be some way that he's going to play the victim card.
I got you. Yeah. I see what you're saying. Yeah, and that even further cements. I don't see how they allow him to go over. I just don't see it. Doc, what you think?
I don't give one single solitary shit about this match, man. if I was watching this at home and it came on the pay per view, I'd be reaching for the fast forward button so we can just keep on moving.
All right. On that note. Nikki Bella and Paige, I actually think it's time for Nikki Bella to lose it. I think Paige wins. I actually think she deserves it. She's one of the best females that's up there. So that's my take on it real quick. What do you think, J-Swire Robo?
You know, I like the Bellas.
I don't have anything against them. I'm good with them. I just don't. She's had it for so long at this point. That's what I'm looking at.
Now, one thing that's interesting about this is do you see how they just remember when they had the gimmick going with the Bella where the Bellas were against each other and one of the sisters was the slave of the other sister and that gimmick just disappeared. How did they turn into faces so fast? These were the most hated women in wrestling, and now all of a sudden they're faces, and women are just people are cheering for them. I don't understand.
They got two big reasons, and they're located on their chest.
There you go.
But only one of them. Only one of them.
Oh, yeah.
Daniel Bryan's wife is Seth's challenge.
Okay, so I can tell you how they became faces. There's a show. It's called Total Divas. If you really want to get down to it. And then they and then they turned. Naomi turned, came out and started just bashing Skull. So that contributed to it as well. But that you can thank that for what's going on.
Yeah,
but with all the ladies on that show.
Yeah, but I do want Nikki Bella to win it though. I do want, and I wouldn't be mad if they did the twin gimmick again, like they did the other night. Where Brie came into the ring and won the match while Nikki was outside the ring. The twin magic. Don't be surprised to see the twin magic.
Nothing would shock me. But I actually think Paige wins it clean. So I'll throw it at Doc. Doc, what do you think?
This match makes me want to watch Ryback and Big Show. I don't care.
And the honesty level continues. All right, so last one of the night that will Money in the Bank match is Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. No way. I love Dean Ambrose and the character and everything. It's hilarious. It's comical, but it's believable. He's got you hear people say he's got that it. He does, but I don't see. There's no way he wins. Seth Rollins retains. I don't know. There's no way they swap it because Brock's still got to come back, and we all know what's going to happen tonight when he does. Or they may do something where that doesn't occur. So, Doc, what do you have on those two?
Man, I like both these guys a lot, but I agree with you. I think there's some resolution that has to occur with Rollins and other guys before you swap it off of the strap off of him. So, yeah, I'll go Rollins as well with shenanigans involved.
Oh, yeah, of course. It's not going to – there will not be – this will not be clean at all. It's not going to be a clean match. I mean, you know that. So, Jay Swell River, what do you think?
Seth Rollins is one of the best villains that the WWE has. You have this guy who is the champion, who no one believes deserves to be the champion, who rightfully does not deserve to be the champion, who is going around acting as though he is the future of the business and walking around as though he is a deserving champion. I mean, what more do you need in a villain? What more do you need in a heel? What more do you need in a guy that everybody in the stadium will boo? Now, me saying that, I love Dean Ambrose, man. Dean Ambrose is, I think that he, at some point, is going to be a WWE champion. I don't think he's going to win at Money in the Bank because of the fact that they're going to further the Seth Rollins, Roman Reigns storyline that for whatever reason, they're going to continue to push upon people. But I think that there's going to be some tomfoolery. I think that Seth Rollins will win, but I think that Dean Ambrose is going to get the last laugh.
Yeah, you're fooling yourself if you believe that's funny. Yeah, he'll get the last laugh. It'll be some shenanigans, but it'll be very entertaining. Don't put it past things to where when you say foolery, I'm not even talking about the authority or anything else you've seen. It's like they've thrown everything at this stage with the whole J&J security on Monday night. And yeah, don't be surprised if it's something that you just don't expect at all. I mean, like somebody not even involved in this storyline right now ends up coming out of nowhere to cause Dean the match, and then he ends up in some kind of storyline. I can't see it being clean. If it is, I'll be shocked. But
no, it's not going to be clean. That's why there's going to be some tomfoolery.
Yeah, it'd be crazy, but it to me it's one of those things where somebody that we're not even thinking about ends up costing Ambrose the match. So just my mm-hmm. thought. But all right, so he knocked out Money in the Bank, and I'm actually looking forward to it. I think it'll be a good show. I'm not down on it. I wasn't excited for Elimination Chamber, but I'm looking forward to Money in the Bank. It seems like usually a pretty good one, and we'll see some surprises, and then we can revisit maybe on our next show or 2 weeks from now what our predictions look like. So, all right, from there, I just want to touch base on Ring of Honor real quick because we're three. You know, I know I spend a little bit of time in the wrestling business, but at the end of the day, I'm a fan just like everyone else. And as far as Ring of Honor goes, besides probably New Japan, which is a little bit different style, I really think Ring of Honor is the best wrestling on TV, and it's only 1 hour. I know you, both of you are like, yep, sure are. So one of the things I wanted to talk about today, just real quick before we jump into our Impact review, which we're all looking forward to, is so how did TNA let Christopher Daniels go and Kazarian? How? Why? Anyone? I mean, seriously.
I don't know, but that promo that Chris Daniels cut at the beginning of the show last week where he said, great line about, you know, look what we did to get these belts. Imagine what we'll do to keep them. Staring in the camera, that was money right there.
Printing money, brother.
Yeah, you know something? I would say that for Ring of Honor, 2 weeks straight, they have had excellent promo openers. Excellent. They hit all of the notes. They hit everything they need to hit in that promo.
Yep.
And guess what? They're doing a good job with promos, and it doesn't take 15 minutes to start the show. They cut it in 90 seconds, and let's get to the ring and have two guys kick each other's ass.
And you don't have a stupid interviewer interviewing them, asking stupid questions.
Yeah, that's a good point. No, it's something that I don't even – Yeah, no, you get the nail on the head. They don't have a stupid – you know, it's funny. I did some local TV during my time in the ring, and nothing wide-scale, just regional a program that I was involved in the late 90s and early 2000s. And it's funny because I can remember, you know, we'd cut promos, and you would just cut them in front of a camera. It wasn't somebody just, you know, sticking a mic in front of your face. Now, don't get me wrong. There is something to that. But, yeah, like you said, they get right to it. They don't have somebody asking stupid questions, and they say what they're going to say and get over it. I mean, look at Jay Lethal. That's one of the things I look forward to on that weekly show. He'll cut that promo, and he's so believable. It's unreal. And then he gets in the ring, and he's even more unbelievable. So, which I'll even ask that question, which I just originally asked. We got Daniels and Kazarian were gone, and Jay Lethal, too, no longer in TNA. And I just don't know. That's three guys that I look at the TNA roster and go, man, you can't tell me they were that expensive and you couldn't keep them.
Okay, but not to go into TNA too much, but they also had AJ Styles on that roster at one point, and they also had Samoa Joe.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Well, the thing about TNA is that you could – the way TNA's contracts are set up, you can be – on a TNA roster, and you can still work for Ring of Honor. You just can't work for Raw, or you can't work for the WWE. Now, the problem, I believe, is that...
No, I don't think you can do that anymore.
Oh, you don't think
like
so?
No. Matter of fact, I'm almost 100% certain, because I know of guys who have worked at ROH, and I know of guys who I've heard them say on even radio shows, like ROH basically has them locked down under contract now, and TNA
does
as well.
Oh, now they have – okay.
Yeah, like I'll give you an example. Christopher Daniels, he said that on a podcast. He's like, no, I'm exclusively ROH at this point. Now, I think he said for the States. So I guess he could technically be overseas, and then, you know, they got the deal with New Japan where they have a partnership. But yeah, if it has anything to do with the United States, no, they're not. ROH is there's no flexibility in that.
Oh, that's interesting, because I know
they can work independence.
Right.
They can do that part.
Yeah. But I agree. I don't understand what TNA was thinking when they let Christopher Daniels and Cesarian go. I just don't know. I mean, because Christopher Daniels is one of the best villains in the business. He's one of the best heels in the business. Cesarian can go either way. He can go face or heel. But Daniels, man, some of those matches between Daniels and AJ Styles, those were legendary, man.
Look, I'm gonna say this, and then we'll move on to the next topic. Christopher Daniels got over Curry, man.
That's a good point, too.
Yeah.
I'm going to repeat it again. He got over Curry, man.
That's making chicken salad out of chicken shit right there.
That, yeah. I mean, come on, man. You got over Curry, man. Like, he embraced it and got it over. Just let that sink in. I mean, so we'll move. Look, we'll go on because we got a couple more things to talk about before we shut this thing down tonight. But here's the thing. I'm gonna say three things. I'm gonna leave the whole X Division tournament alone that they had on Impact. We can maybe talk about that next week when we figure out who wins this puppy. Or I don't even know if it's happening next week because I didn't even see what the plug was for next week. So we got three things I want to talk about real quick, and I'll list them. So we got Rockstar Spud and Angle. I'll call it the Dollhouse Stupidity, which I actually like the Dollhouse as I say that, so I don't want to get, you know, hate mail. And then we got the whole Bram thing that Doc wants to talk about, and then Angle and Aries. So I'm going to give you my short assessment of Rockstar Spud and Angle. I thought the match was fine. I was good with it. The only thing bad about it was I never thought there was any way they would allow Rockstar Spud to win. And I really like Rockstar Spud. He cuts promos, he can work. But there was no way. I think Destination America's got their hands on this whole thing with Angle making sure he keeps the belt. So it wasn't gonna happen. What do you think, Jason Barovo?
You know, so I was watching that match and I understand, and Mike, we talked offline about Kurt Angle and my thoughts on Kurt Angle. But I understand why they have Kurt Angle on the roster. When I was watching that match, Kurt Angle was putting Rockstar Spud over. I mean, if you look at some of the moves, some of the interaction, Rockstar Spud actually seemed like he had a shot at winning.
Oh, I agree.
It looked like he took Kurt Angle to the limit. And,
yeah.
And that just shows that Kurt Angle, that shows the type of wrestler that Kurt Angle is, that he's willing to give these young guys a chance. And he's willing to push these young guys over because of the fact that his best days are behind him, and he knows that. He's a legend in professional wrestling. He's in the TNA Hall of Fame, and he will be in the WWE Hall of Fame at some point. But the fact that, in spite of that, he didn't do it. He didn't pull the Triple H. You know, he allowed Rockstar Spud to get. He allowed him to show that he could hang with the big guys. And when I was looking at, when I was watching that match, you know what it kind of reminded me of? Remember the old WCW days when Rey Mysterio Jr. was the giant killer?
Yeah.
Remember those days? That's what he reminded me of.
And that was actually at a time this will give me some heat, when I actually bought into what Rey did. Because some of the stuff WWE did, Doc, you and I have talked about this with Rey, you know, the whole Big Show thing and that angle they had, we just really didn't buy into it. But the WCW Mysterio, I bought into a lot more, just based on what he was doing. Even the ECW Rey Mysterio. So,
yeah.
But no, I agree, man. It, like, he, Angle put him over, even though he didn't drop the belt to him. But it was good. Doc, what do you think about that Spud Angle match?
I thought it was pretty interesting because it's something that you don't see a lot of in today's wrestling, is a face versus a face for the belt match. So
it was
a different sort of approach to the match where, you know, the crowd wasn't out there to boo necessarily one of the guys. And so from that angle, you know, I'm not a big fan of Rockstar Spud because they keep putting him in like with guys that he has no chance to beat, so I take it out on Rockstar Spud. But I thought it was all right for what it was. I mean, at no point did I think he was going to win. So, again, I agree with what you guys said. Kudos to Angle for working his tail off to make it seem as believable as it did for as long as it went on.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I'm a big Spud fan. The dude is just good. I don't care that he's small. He knows what he's doing. I mean, he's got it. I don't know if he'll ever go anywhere else because I could see like WWE thinking he's too small or whatnot, but he's very talented. He cuts a mean promo. He's just very good in the ring, very sound. I'd like to see more out of him. I wish they wouldn't have did the whole thing with the option C where he went with Angle, but it is, you know, whatever. That's what they decided to do from an Angle perspective. So next, I'm going to keep this short. I don't mind the Dollhouse. As heels, because I think it's actually kind of almost sinister the way they kind of came out with the Jawbreaker deal. But enticing me with that whole thing where Kong's going to come out with the lingerie on to whoop Taryn's butt, and then Brooke comes out, and then she ends up whipping Taryn. But Kong whips Marty and Jade and then disappears. Like, if I'm Kong, I'm not just going to disappear. I'm going to stick around after I whoop Jade and Marty, and I'm going to go whoop Taryn. I don't know. The way they did it just was, I don't know, look, I thought it was really dumb, but that's just me. Doc, do you give two shits about what happened there?
Yeah, actually, I think it's kind of funny because, you know, 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, they were getting a lot of wrestling press praise for how they were presenting the female division. That you had Gail Kim and Taryn in her old role, and Kong, who's, I mean, she's awesome. And
right
now we're just right back into the way to win a match or to get over on another female is to rip off all their clothes. Now, hey, I like to watch women rip off each other's clothes as much as the next guy, but maybe not on a wrestling program. Keep that in my personal life, you know what I'm saying? But it just seems like they've regressed so far, so fast with this whole gimmick, and that the only thing, the value that women have here is to have a pillow fight rather than get in there and wrestle. And that's particularly disturbing when you have NXT presenting the women, you know, headline, main eventing an event. Meanwhile, TNA is back to the bra and panties.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I agree. I really can't say much more about it. Jason Robo, did you think anything of it? I mean, you can tell me it wasn't your favorite thing. We can move on. But it just was, I didn't like it too much. It was just kind of, okay.
Guys. Brothers, you are not going to like what I have to say here.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to just go ahead and say it. Velvet Sky is my favorite female wrestler.
Me too, now, me too, me too.
And next to Velvet Sky, I love me some Taryn Terrell. She could just come to the ring and just sit there and read poetry, and I would cheer. The fact that she was this, when she first came into Impact, she was a referee, and then she was this goody-two-shoe wrestler, and she was like Gail Kim's protege or what have you. And now she has turned into the top female heel in Impact. I love it. I love the gimmick. I love the Dollhouse gimmick because we know there is no way on God's green earth that Taryn Terrell could beat Awesome Kong in just a one-on-one match. So the only way she could beat her is this lingerie pillow fight gimmick match.
I was concerned whether
Awesome Kong was going to put on the red lingerie or what have you. But that was the only way that she can get over. Because there is no believable way that she could beat Kong.
I agree with you. I like the dollhouse. I don't have a problem with the dollhouse. I like the way they did it. I like the way they brought the dollhouse in and the way the belt stayed on Taryn. I like all that. Just that whole segment, though, I was like, it just didn't make sense. So Brooke comes out after Kong whips Marty and Jade to the back. Well, Kong's whole deal is after she pummeled Marty and Jade is, okay, now I'm going to go after Taryn. Why is she just going to the back, and why is Brooke coming out? It just didn't make sense. Who knows? Maybe we're going to see more from it. I don't know. That's just my take on it.
Yeah. Now, one thing I will agree with you guys on is that for years, the distinction between WWE and TNA was the fact that the TNA knockout could actually wrestle. And now they're moving away from that.
And it's flopping again.
Yeah,
flip-flopping, I mean.
Yeah, it's disappointing because of the fact that there have been some awesome ladies wrestling matches in TNA. Gail Kim, Angelina Love, these ladies actually can wrestle. Madison Rayne. So, you know, I am, from the standpoint of a wrestling fan wanting to see wrestling, I am disappointed from that gimmick. But as a man, I love Dollhouse, and I love Taryn Terrell, and, you know, I can't say anything bad about him. That's all I have to say.
I hear you. No, I'm good with the Dollhouse gimmick. The segment just didn't do anything for me. So, We got about 4 or 5 minutes left, guys, so we'll try to knock this last bit out before we get out of here tonight. Doc, I don't have much to say about the whole Bram thing, so I'll go ahead and let you cut your promo deal because I know that made you a little – I know, God darn it, you didn't want to get that hot, but, man, you're just getting ticked off. So go ahead and tell us your thoughts on the whole Bram and what happened.
15 seconds, because I went back and timed it. 15 seconds is how long it took Crimson to get Bram off his feet. Bram, this whole segment is started by him just with his boot on a cameraman's face. He comes out and cuts this vicious promo about hating history and the past and just people in general, which, hey, I'm like, man, I'd like to hang out with Bram. He shares some of the same things I think about. They show Crimson start out. Bram, they show an overhead shot. Bram is pacing back and forth in the ring like, give me somebody to whip ass on. He looked just like Bruiser Brody used to look in the ring, pacing. And in 15 seconds, he's off his feet, hadn't gotten an offensive move. Who in the hell books this shit? You got a guy who has legit charisma. He's willing to be a heel, which God bless wrestlers today that will heel out for real.
Yep.
He seems to have a nasty streak. He's a big dude. Now, they kind of messed up by bringing Crimson in because Crimson was looking him straight in the eye. So if you're trying to build a monster in Bram, maybe have him pick on some smaller people first.
Yeah, that was the part that I was mentioning. Like it's hard because Crimson's, I guess, established in TNA or was established. He'd been out for a little while. That was the part that I had. You know, I don't criticize Crimson in that in respect of, but I agree with you. Like, whoa, could they have brought someone else out for him to kind of manhandle?
Get Tigre Uno out there or something, but let him just throw somebody out of the ring like Mike Awesome used to throw Tanaka back in the OECW days, but build this guy up. I mean, it's pretty obvious they're going to waste MVP. They still have a shot to do something with EC3, who's a guy with some talent, but you can never have too many good heels on your roster, and Bram is just sitting there underutilized, and you put him in that spot, and automatically from Jump Street, you ring the bell, and it goes to the drizzling shit immediately.
I agree.
I did mean to get this hot.
Well, look, we're running out of time, but You mentioned I'm going to segue over to EC3 because the only thing I want to say is I do like what they did at the end of the night with Angle and Aries. You know, EC3 comes out and does his heel thing, as I'll call it, and sneaks Angle, holds up the belt. I don't have a problem with that. I like it. I like EC3, kind of like Bram. He's a heel, and he really does good heel work, and it was good to see that. So I think, Doc, you and I actually talked about that offline, and, you know, you are all right with that. It was a solid match. You know, there wasn't anything I would even begin to criticize. Those two guys are seasoned pros and are very good at what they do. So I thought that was good. Y'all have a different take on it, or would y'all both agree?
I agree. No, I thought it was a solid match.
Yeah, me
really
too.
Think it was solid. And I knew that Angle was not going to drop the belt. However, again, Angle put over his opponent.
Yeah, yeah. And hey, look, there's something to it too. He keeps the belt, right? But Aries looked strong. I mean, there was nothing where that looked weak. And then what I like about it is then they took the whole EC3 thing to the next level when he comes out, holds up the belt at the end. You know, he's a heel. I like that because then it furthers the storyline. And now I kind of see, so it looks like we're going with this Angle EC3 thing now, and EC3's been fighting on it. So I'm good with that. It sounds like both of y'all are as well. So
EC3,
future
champ. Future champ, EC3.
Say that again.
EC3, future TNA heavyweight champion.
Oh, yeah, I don't see why not.
Right.
I don't see why not. All right, and the last thing we're going to talk about, or I just want to plug before we get out of here, again, it's Friday night, June 12th on Access TV. You need to tune in to New Japan if you're listening to this show and you're still hanging with us at this point. Hopefully you set your DVR because there's a tag team match with Yuji Nagata, and if I'm butchering these names, I apologize, and Tomaki Honma up against Hiroki Goto and Shibata. And when I tell you these dudes get out there and start smacking the living crap out of each other, I sincerely mean it. And it was highly entertaining, and the best part about it, it's only an hour of your time to tune into New Japan. The three of us love the New Japan show and what it is. So before we wrap this thing up, Jason Robo, you got anything?
Man, I am good, man. I want to thank you for inviting me onto the show. I really enjoy talking about wrestling. This is something that I've been watching all my life. This is something that my grandfather and I, we will watch every Saturday night, Mid-South Wrestling with Junkyard Dog, Ted DiBiase. I've grown up on wrestling. It transitioned to the WCW, the Monday Night Wars, and that was back when I was living in New Orleans, man. We were working in New Orleans, the Monday Night Wars between WWE and WCW. So, you know, I enjoy talking about wrestling, and I especially enjoy talking about it on your show today, man. So I really do appreciate it.
Oh, no problem, man. We'll have you back periodically. It's not a big deal at all. I'm glad you came on, man. I've been knowing you for a long time, so I know you're passionate about it. And you just like to be entertained. You like to see good wrestling. And, man, that stands for us and all of our fans that listen as well. Doc, you got anything?
Yeah, I want to say something real quick. You know, my favorite wrestler of all time, and it's not even close, is Ric Flair.
Oh, yeah.
But you don't have Ric Flair attain the lofty heights he had and achieved without having – the good side of the coin to go after it. So this week, we all know Dusty Rhodes passed away. And just rest in peace, Big Dust. You got hard times put on you this week. But, man, there's a lot of kids down in NXT that won't get to attend Dusty's promo class anymore or learn from him. And you talk about a guy who had just a multi-generational impact on the business. So, you know, a lot of the guys we talked about tonight and the stuff we talked about, they wouldn't be here if it weren't for Big Dust. So, rest in peace, big man.
I totally agree, and if you're at this far in the episode, you would have heard my introduction. I did a little, paid some tribute to Dusty. I never met him, wish I would have. He was one of a kind. He could. The best part about Dusty is he could relate to, you know, the fan could relate to him, I should say, as just a common man, you know, son of a plumber, as he said. I mean, this doesn't get any better than that. And as fans, you know, to have that connection, that's the thing. So when you're a fan and you can connect to a wrestler, that just makes you like it that much more. And you're right. I know you're a Ric Flair guy, and Flair's your guy. But man, without the NWA and Dusty Rhodes, who knows what Ric Flair is? He's still very successful, but you can never forget that tribute. And yeah, I actually played the Hard Times promo for everybody on the show at the beginning. So, hey, go back and listen to that again. Trust me, it never gets old. all right, other than that, man, I think we're wrapped up for the day. So we'll be back next week. Don't forget to go visit our sponsors page, and that's T&A's Wrestling Palace. If you live in DFW, they are at Traders Village in Grand Prairie for all your wrestling memorabilia needs. They will take care of you, and they will ship anywhere. Trying to think of anything else we might be missing today. We'll have part two of Rod Price on next week's show, the rest of our interview with him, and we're working on getting some other interviews lined up with some other talent from the indie level, and who knows, maybe some former WWE talent as well. We're just trying to get schedules lined up to take care of those things. I think that's going to do it, though, folks. So hope you enjoyed the show. Go ahead and connect with us on Twitter at BTT_podcast and on our Facebook page. We look forward to hearing from you again, and send us those questions. We got three questions today, but we didn't have a chance to get to them because we ran out of time. But luckily they're not time stamped, so we will get to them next week. We appreciate you tuning in. Take care. Even though I'm